Chapter 10. The circling paparazzi helicopters were foiled by the snowy white tent erected over the manicured lawns of the Beverly Hills estate. The tent was easily twice the size of the nearby azure Olympic-sized swimming pool. When a Los Angeles County Sheriff's Bell Jet Ranger appeared, as per their instructions, the two hired choppers took off before their tail numbers could be identified for later prosecution for encroaching on the no-fly zone. The pilots weren't going to risk arrest, no matter how much the photographers tried to bribe and then harangue them. The pampered guests under the marquee were accustomed to such intrusions of their privacy and paid scant attention to the drama. The sound of the aircraft faded, and the buzz of conversation returned to its normal level. The band on a raised wooden platform at one end of the tent resumed playing, while toned starlets in skimpy bikinis, de rigueur for any Hollywood party, ventured back to cavort around the swimming pool. The house looming over the expansive backyard was a faux Mediterranean villa encompassing nearly 40,000 square feet of living space, with a separate guest house twice the size of the average American home. The underground garage could accommodate 20 cars. Two multi-million dollar properties had been bought and leveled to give the new owners what they wanted, and crews had worked nearly around the clock for 3 years to complete the walled compound. In a town accustomed to garish displays of wealth, the estate had sent chins wagging since it was first proposed. The owners were Thomas and Heidi Severance. They weren't actors, nor were they moguls in the film industry, although Tom Severance had worked as an executive at a studio for a couple of years. They were the benefactors and guardians of the estate of the late Dr. Lydell Cooper, the founder of Responsivism, and they now headed the growing institution. The money to build the house, which doubled as the group's California headquarters, had come from donors from all over the world, although the bulk had been raised among the Hollywood elite who flocked to Responsivism in ever-increasing numbers. Tom Severance had been among the first to recognize the brilliance of Dr. Cooper's breakout book, We're Breeding Ourselves to Death, and had sought the author out to help spread the word. It was natural that Tom would find a kindred spirit in Cooper's daughter, Heidi. They were married after a 2-month courtship, and it was their boundless energy that had grown Responsivism into the worldwide phenomena it was today. They had taken over, as Cooper had wanted upon his death, and continued his work. Their charisma had especially attracted followers in the entertainment industry, and when Oscar-winning actress Donna Skye had admitted to the world she had been practicing responsivism for many years, the group's popularity exploded. Tom Severance stood at a solid 6 feet, with surgically enhanced features that gave him a commanding aura. He was 53, yet his sandy hair had yet to thin and his eyes had lost none of their compelling appeal. The cream linen jacket he wore was cut too large for his frame, but rather than detract from his exercise-hued body, the effect made him look even more well-muscled. When he laughed, which was often, his white teeth contrasted with the permanent tan he sported. Heidi stood at his side. She was only a couple of years younger than Tom, but looked to be in her late 30s. She was the quintessential California girl, with perfectly tinted blonde hair, radiant blue eyes, and the figure of a professional athlete. Her neck was her greatest asset, long and graceful, and she took full advantage of it by wearing low-cut tops and necklaces laced with flawless diamonds. Individually, Tom and Heidi were attractive people. Together, they made such a striking couple that it was little wonder they were always the center of attention. And no more so than here, at a responsivist function, to celebrate the grand opening of their new headquarters. "Congratulations, Tom," a famed director said, sidling up and kissing Heidi's burnished cheek with easy familiarity. "You too, Hides. You should both be very proud of yourselves. I know Dr. Cooper would be." He spoke the name reverently. "Future generations will look back at this center as the place where the dark tides of overpopulation were finally pushed back." "It will be a beacon of hope for the world," Heidi Severance replied. "As my father told us, the beginning of the struggle will be the most difficult. But as word spreads and people begin to understand what is at stake, ours will be seen as the responsible lifestyle. I read in Generations about the declining birth rates in the villages around our new clinic in Sierra Leone, the director went on. Generations was the group's biannual magazine. Severance nodded. Cited far from where Christian and Muslim missionaries have plied their trade and corrupted the people with their lies, we've done better than we hoped. We're getting the villagers to understand that preventing unwanted children raises their standard of living more than handouts and platitudes from churches. The article didn't say if we're explaining how our lives are influenced through intra-brain interference and how we can fight back against it. This time, Tom shook his head. The fact that an alien presence exists in a dimension of the universe parallel to our own isn't something we feel they can handle just yet. Our guiding philosophy will come a bit later. For now, we're just content to lower the regional birth rate. The director accepted this and saluted the couple with his highball glass before drifting off into the crowd so the others in the throng hovering around the Severances could add their congratulations. "He's a good man," Heidi whispered to her husband. "His last film grossed over $200 million, but his contributions over the past 12 months are down 5%. "I'll talk to Tamara." Tamara was the director's new trophy wife and one of Heidi's proteges. Tom didn't seem to hear as he was reaching into his jacket pocket for a vibrating cell phone. He folded it open, said his name, and listened for a minute without changing his facial expression. "Thank you," he said at last, and refolded the phone. He looked at Heidi. Her shining eyes and smile were brighter than the 11-carat diamond at her throat. "That was Kovach," Tom said quietly, so no one else could hear. "A freighter just reported spotting wreckage floating in the Indian Ocean." "Oh my God." It was positively identified from a life raft as the Golden Dawn. Heidi Severance's hand went to her neck as her skin grew flush. There were no survivors. Her smile blossomed and she gushed, "That is wonderful, simply wonderful." Tom looked as though a great burden had been lifted from his shoulders. "A few weeks, darling, and everything we and your father have worked for will come to pass. The world will be reborn, and this time we won't screw it up." "It will be reborn in our image," Heidi added, taking his hand. She gave no thought to the 783 men, women, and children who had perished on the cruise ship, many of them members of her organization. It was only a tiny fraction of the deaths to come.